No holiday for politics. Thanksgiving gatherings generating mellow moods, but not affecting political realities. We're getting insight from partisan strategist Republican Doug Gross and Democrat Jeff Link on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
Iowa banks know you want honest advice about how to best reach your financial goals. Whether it's financing and education, buying a new home, growing a business, or funding retirement, Iowa banks, Iowa values. MyIowaBank.com.
Iowa Communications Network. The ICN is committed to the enhancements of distance learning and continues to meet the demands for greater access of high-speed internet by educational users. Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org.
Alliant Energy, working to help small businesses control energy costs with energy-efficient equipment and advice on smart energy use. Information is available at alliantenergy.com.
For decades, Iowa Press has brought you politicians and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond, celebrating more than 40 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa public television. This is the Friday, November 29 edition of Iowa Press. Here is Dean Borg.
Politics isn't taking a holiday, never does. The fervency driving societal issues and political philosophies may even be burning a bit stronger this weekend as people travel to interact, maybe even clash, with other opinions on the issues of our time, even as they're passing the turkey and dressing. Well, it's in that spirit that we've invited two veteran Iowa political activists. Des Moines attorney Doug Gross is a former chief of staff for Governor Terry Branstad and himself once ran for governor. Democrat Jeff Link also lists chief of staff on his resume in Senator Tom Harkin's office, and he also managed Al Gore's Iowa presidential campaign and a media consultant also in Barack Obama's first presidential campaign. Gentlemen, welcome back to Iowa Press.
Good to be with you.
Thank you.
And I said in that spirit, just after I'd said turkey, I didn't mean to reference you. Across the Iowa Press table, Iowa Public Radio's Sarah McCammon and Radio Iowa News Director Kay Henderson.
Let us begin with the U.S. Senate race. Mr. Gross, the last time I saw you was at the Marc Jacobs announcement. Yeah. Are you a paid consultant or just a volunteer cheerleader for that effort?
I've been working with him for a long time. Actually, when he decided he wanted to come and focus on education reform in Iowa, he approached me, and I've been working with him ever since. He was very effective in terms of dealing with education reform, getting accountability put in the system, and now I'm very impressed with how he's launched his campaign.
So when you say you're working for him, is on a volunteer basis? Well, are you like his...
I don't personally get paid. There's an organization I'm a part of that gets paid.
Okay. Is someone in the Mitt Romney mold, if you will, the person to be successful in a Republican primary, given Romney's past history in Iowa? Because isn't Marc Jacobs sort of a Mitt Romney Republican?
Well, the key to Marc Jacobs, I think, is the fact that he's passionately committed to the state of Iowa and that he wants to make a difference in Iowa. Here's a gentleman like a lot of us that grew up in our state, is imbued with our values, went outside the state of Iowa because there weren't job opportunities here, became very successful, and comes back to Iowa because he wants to be part of the next generation of leadership. I think that's a good role to have, and I think I'm very appreciative of the fact that he's willing to do that.
Jeff, a recent survey by Harper Polling gives Congressman Bruce Braley just a slight edge over several potential GOP nominees in the Senate race. Given Congressman Braley's name recognition and that he's the only Democrat in the field, are you concerned that that span isn't larger?
Well, we don't get excited when the polls are good 11 and a half months out, and we don't get excited when the polls are not good 11 and a half months out. I think in the end, at some point, June of next year, we're going to figure out who the Republican nominee is going to be. It could be Marc Jacobs. It could be Bob Vanderplatz. It could be one of the other candidates running. That's when voters will really have a choice to make, and I think that's when things will matter more in those early polls.
Wouldn't Joni Ernst be the hardest candidate among that group of Republicans for Democrats to run against because she would be breaking the glass ceiling in Iowa were she to win the Senate race?
She might be. It's hard to say. You know, there was a lot of fanfare about her candidacy when it was first announced or considered, but it hasn't really gone anywhere. So it'll be interesting to see if she can really regain any momentum. You know, Jacobs is sort of the flavor of the month right now, and we'll see how things shake out by next June.
Flavor of the month, Doug?
I think what we've got right now is a situation where the race is pretty much unformed. I think there was a poll that came out just recently that showed that most of the candidates are pretty much neck and neck with Braley, even though that most of the people in Iowa don't even know them. So as a result of that, I don't think that Senate race has really started in earnest yet, Dean. I think that the next few months, particularly January through April, will sort of tell the tale of that race.
What's going to take to gel it?
Well, I think, first of all, they'll have to raise money, and they'll have to be able to be competitive. They'll have to be able to get their name out and make sure people are aware of them, because the awareness of folks in that race right now is well below 50%, even among likely Republican primary voters. So people don't know enough about them to make decisions. So they've got to have enough money to get their name out. They've got to develop a good organization, and they've got to focus on issues that people care about.
Speaking of money, they haven't done a very good job of raising money heretofore.
Yeah, that's clearly an issue. And one of the advantages Mark Jacobs has is not only does he have the ability to raise money, he also has his own money that he's willing to commit to the race. So Mark has an advantage there. That's probably why you're saying he's the flavor of the month. I happen to think that Mark will win that primary.
One Republican who does have quite a bit of name recognition, hasn't announced yet, but has been talked about for the Senate race, evangelical activist Bob Vanderplaats. Mm-hmm. Doug, if he ran, do you think he'd get the nomination?
You know, this poll came out recently about the Republican primary candidacy, and they included Bob Vanderplaats in that and took a look at it, and I think he got 28% of the vote. And the rest of the candidates at this point, were under 10%. But Bob's name identification at this point is probably at 90% among likely Republican primary voters. And the fact that Bob is only at 28 and you need at least 35 to avoid a convention indicates to me that not even Bob would be a lock cinch if he were to decide to run.
Jeff, primaries often make candidates better, i.e. Barack Obama, as an example. Is Braley suffering to some extent because he doesn't have a primary challenge that's honing his skills and forcing him to answer tough questions?
No.
Why not?
I mean, he's been through a tough primary. He had to win a tough primary in 2006.
A long time ago. 2006
doesn't seem like that long ago. No, he is doing exactly what he needs to do. In fact, this week he's been in western Iowa. He was in Shenandoah yesterday in Ringgold County. He's making his way around the state. He's introducing himself to voters. Not having a primary is the best thing in the world for Bruce Braley.
There's been a lot of talk about, you know, this 35% threshold that somebody has to get if there is a crowded primary. As someone who ran in a three-way primary and just barely got
35. Oh, no, okay, I made it.
and what was that tally?
I don't know precisely, but maybe like 35.6.
That's what I was thinking. What's the likelihood? I mean, what are the odds you're placing on the fact that this nominee will actually be chosen at the state convention rather than by voters in the primary if you have seven candidates?
It really depends, I think, upon how many candidates stay to the finish. Because you're going to have to raise money, as I said earlier, in that January to April time frame in order to be competitive in that race in the Republican primary. Some of those candidates, I suspect, will have to drop out because they're not raising money during that time frame and won't be able to be competitive. So if you have three or four candidates, I think it's very possible that one of those candidates will get more than 35%.
Whoever the GOP nominee is, Congressman Braley may well have to overcome sort of the Obamacare drag, you might call it. It has not been popular. It has not. The rollout has not gone well, as you know. Are you worried, Jeff, that can Congressman Braley distance himself from those problems?
Well, I think you know Obamacare has gotten off to a rocky start. There's no question about that. They're going to fix the process for enrolling people into Obamacare, and I think when we get into next year, once people get enrolled, they're going to realize that you no longer can be discriminated against for pre-existing conditions. You can keep your adult children from 22 to 26 on your own health care plan, and there are real advantages to the reforms that were made. And I think once we get past this rocky start, people are going to say we don't want to go back to the way things were before. The other big thing that's going on with Obamacare, for the first time, we are seeing a reduction in the growth of healthcare costs. I think healthcare costs are only growing at 1.3% in the last 3 years, whereas in the previous 40 years, they were growing at 4.5%. So if we can really bend the cost curve, that's going to have a real impact on the debt, the deficit, and the economy.
Doug, is Obamacare a one-trick pony that Republicans can ride to victory in every race?
Well, it's like the gift that just keeps giving. Okay. I mean, not only do we have problems associated with the website and trying to sign up, and it doesn't work unless that effectively the exchange works, because that's how you access the system. But then you have people who have had their policies canceled, which we know about. In the future, we're going to have layoffs at hospitals and clinics around the state of Iowa and around the country because associated with this. It's going to continue to wear way down on the economy and reduce the extent to which small businesses hire people. It's a problem that's not going to go away for the Democrats. And I see it as an issue that once Republicans finally got out of the way of the shutdown routine, where we basically were stepping on our own message and let people see Obamacare for what it is, I think it's going to be politically very beneficial to Republicans.
But if, as Jeff suggests, some of these kinks with the internet, the web, the online system get worked out and the program starts to roll out, becomes more popular, catches on with people, what's next for the Republicans? What's the message going forward?
I think both parties, my view of things right now in our country and really in our state, are such that right now we have a crisis where there's not equality of opportunity for people, particularly for young people. And I don't think where either party is effectively addressing that right now. You got the young people flock to Obama thinking big government, Obamacare, stimulus, taxing the rich, those are going to be ways we can equalize opportunity, and it hasn't worked. They're still left out. Republicans need to come up with an opportunity message for 2014 that focuses on providing opportunities for all. If they do that, they'll be big winners in 14.
And are you saying there that Republicans, in addition to the other demographic groups, that they need to attract Hispanics, women, that young people as well?
Particularly in the state of Iowa, I believe that's the case. If Republicans can't do a better job of appealing to young people, where's the future of the party? It's very, very important that be done. And right now, they're the lost generation. They're people that are folks who are those who can afford college or coming out of college with big debts, with jobs that don't pay off those debts, and the likelihood of opportunities that aren't very good. Mm-hmm. And that's all under the Obama administration. They're looking for solutions for opportunity right now.
Let us shift to the governor's race, because that's the other marquee battle in 2014. Mr. Link, can Democrats win by simply saying six terms is way too many?
No, I think that the Democrats have to lay out a vision for the direction of the state. I think that's elections are about tomorrow. They're not about yesterday. And I think that's what each of our candidates needs to do.
Mr. Gross, would you advise the governor to seek a seventh term? I mean, he's already seeking a sixth term. I mean, what's to say he won't want to do this again and try to serve as long as Chuck Grassley has served in the U.S. Senate?
Well, obviously, that's his decision, and then the people of Iowa's decision ultimately as to whether or not they want him to serve that long. Obviously, they're pleased with his service to date, and for good reason. He's fulfilled the promises that he's made when he ran. I think the gubernatorial election is a lot about the future, as Jeff says, but is even more important about the present. The thing to watch with the gubernatorial election is the right track, wrong track numbers in the state of Iowa. So long as those right track numbers, if people think the state's heading in the right direction, are above 50, I think it'll be very difficult to beat Terry Branstad.
So Jeff, what he's saying is that Branstad can run on his record, and Democrats seem to be sort of aligning with the fact that his tenure is going to be a liability. So what prevails here, tenure or the fact that the record looks good?
Well, I think his record will be at issue. And, you know, he's sort of getting tripped up on these job numbers for no good reason. There is a decent story to tell about the Iowa economy, and he's trumping up job numbers when he doesn't need to. I don't understand why they're getting hung up on this.
And do you have a response to that, Doug?
Sure. So long as we're talking about jobs, the governor wins. I mean, the governor's focused on helping restore the Iowa economy to strength. He's certainly done that. He's talked about creating jobs. He's about increasing incomes. All these things are occurring. So long as we're talking about those kinds of things, I think the governor wins.
On the other hand, Jeff, Democrats arguably have the opposite liability on their side of the aisle, which is hardly any name recognition. How do you overcome that against a governor as well known as Governor Branstad?
I mean, like the Senate race, when we have a nominee, that's when the race will actually take shape. And people in October of next year are going to know the Republican nominee for Senate, and they're going to know the Democratic nominee for governor. And, you know, so the candidates are not going to have name ID problems when people are actually deciding. But the challenge is to set forth a different vision than the incumbent governor has. And I think that's what our candidate needs to do.
Doug, you recently, a couple months ago, predicted that Steve King would have a primary challenge from a pro-business candidate. He was on the show, Congressman King, mm-hmm. and said, essentially, there's no truth to that rumor. Was that just wishful thinking out loud on your part, or was there actually
no,
a candidate?
And I've talked to Steve about this subsequent to this. No. In fact, I've told him I would give him the names if he really wanted those names. I won't provide them to you, which I expect you to ask. But I had people approach me. This was at the time when Steve was talking, making, frankly, I thought, intemperate remarks regarding immigrants and immigration reform and a number of other matters. And I think there were some people, frankly, that didn't feel that that represented the kind of Iowa and the Iowans that we have and we are. And so some people did approach me, indicating they had some interest in 2016 in potentially running against Steve King in the primary. My view on Steve, subsequent to that, particularly subsequent to the shutdown of the government, Steve seems to be focused on a message of unifying the party, focusing on the farm bill and getting a farm bill passed, and I think that's smart on Steve's part.
So those people who came and talked to you now are saying, oh, forget it.
No, I haven't come and said they forget it. I haven't talked to them since. But I think Steve's changed some, modulated his message some, and I think it's been good.
Do you think that that's satisfying to the moderate wing of the party?
The truth is in the performance. I mean, Steve is on the conference committee for the farm bill. I think he's offering an amendment that's important, for example, to an important part of our economy in Iowa on livestock and doing a good job of that. If Steve does a good job, I think he'll be fine. If Steve makes incendiary remarks that don't reflect where Iowans are on some of these key issues, I think there's always a possibility.
And Jeff, you know, race after what race, Congressman King is seen as potentially vulnerable, someone that possibly Democrats could challenge. It didn't work in 2012 with Kristi Vilsack. What do you do next in that seat to try to take it for the Democratic side?
Well, I think we have a great candidate in that district right now, Jim Maurer. He has a terrific background. He's a veteran. He brings something different to this race, and I think he's going to be a real handful. For Steve King. And, you know, I think the only way that Steve King doesn't make incendiary remarks is if he stops talking. And so I think he stopped talking for the last couple months. That's it. He hasn't moderated or modulated in any way. He just hasn't been in the news.
Doug, he did run a little bit of a different campaign. He debated his opponent in 2012, mm-hmm. which he hadn't done for years.
He ran a great campaign.
Do you see him going forward? Do you see a change in the way Steve King campaigns?
It's important for Steve to raise money. I mean, Steve has historically not been a very, very good fundraiser, and it's important for him to raise money. He can't be outraised by his Democrat opponent. That can't be. He's the incumbent congressman there. And that should be a strong district for Republicans. It's the strongest district in the state by registration. So he needs to raise money, he needs to run a good campaign, and he'll be fine. But he needs to do those things.
Is that a wake-up call?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. On this Thanksgiving weekend, let's play the favorite parlor game of politicos all over the country and talk about 2016. Jeff, will Hillary Clinton run in Iowa? And if she doesn't, what does that do to the future of the caucuses?
I think if she runs, she will run an aggressive campaign in Iowa.
Why?
I don't think there's any doubt about it, because she will be a national front runner like we've never seen before, and she will have a 50-state strategy.
She was the national front runner in 2008.
It's different this time. I think she has an enhanced profile, even more than she had in 2008 because of her service as Secretary of State. I think that's a real game changer for her. But she can't afford not to run a campaign in all 50 states.
Let's talk about a couple of other Democrats. Brian Schweitzer is coming to the state. He's a former Montana governor. Amy Klobuchar, who's a Minnesota senator, has been here. But a person who hasn't been here, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, has really got people buzzing. Is she for real?
I think she's a star in our party, and I think she's attracting attention around the country. Obviously, she was a prolific fundraiser in her Senate race. I think she raised $60 million to run for the United States Senate. She has a network that is ready to mount a national campaign if she decided to.
Could she beat Hillary?
She's endorsed Hillary, so I don't think she's going to beat her.
You know, sometimes people do that and then situations change. Finally, Joe Biden spoke at the Hark and Steak Fry. He sure sounded, looked, acted like a candidate who wants to run. Do you think he will?
You know, he's in touch with a lot of Iowans on a regular basis. He has a lot of friends here, and I think he's going to take a good hard look at the race in 2016.
Do you think he is a credible candidate?
Absolutely.
Why?
He's Vice President of the United States.
Okay.
Doug, on your side of the aisle.
Sure.
So I'm going to start with governors here that have been talked about. There are a lot of different people potentially talked about. Chris Christie, Rick Perry, Scott Walker. Who do you see as the strongest?
Well, right now, Chris Christie is. I mean, and frankly, anyone who's coming from Washington and expects to get promotion, whether that's Bruce Braley or anybody wanting to run for president, has to have their head examined. I mean, that's 9% approval for Congress. And so someone who wants to run out of that mess and think they ought to be promoted to a higher job is going to have a difficult time. Chris Christie coming right off a 22% win in a very difficult blue state of New Jersey is in a very strong position.
Might answer the next question, but just bracketing that for a second. Senators, Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, among that field, who's the strongest?
Mike Lee.
No. I don't see Mike Lee running for president, so he was out here, but I don't see him running for it. At the end of the day, I really question whether or not Ted Cruz will run for president. I think he's enjoying the testing the waters and getting the attention that he's getting. I think Rand Paul very much wants to run for president, so I just think of those three, he's the likely candidate.
And in another sign that there's really never any presidential offseason in Iowa, just this month we've seen Mike Huckabee, Rick Santorum, Paul Ryan, Sarah Palin all visit the state. Who do you think is likely to run of that group?
I think most of them will. I think they all want to. And I think they all understand that you can't just sort of fly in at the end and do well. You've got to do the work. You've got to slog it out, particularly on the Republican side where you have to go to all those 99 counties. I think a lot of those folks will. I expect we're going to have a very large field for the presidency and the caucuses in 16.
Jeff, as we look ahead to the caucuses, do you see any problem in the way that Iowa presents itself to the nation on its past reputation, the way the caucuses ran last time? Do you see any problem with any of the candidates coming into Iowa because of what happened in the last caucus, presidential caucus?
I think we have a real situation with the leadership of the Republican Party of Iowa right now, and Doug has talked about this before. We have to have a credible, fair system with the Democratic Party and the Republican Party to encourage a fair caucus.
Do you think that exists now?
I think there's doubts about it. I think
Where do you see doubts?
I think the chairman of the Republican Party doesn't have the support of the governor or Senator Grassley, doesn't necessarily have the support of all the county parties. And I think if he tips the scale in favor of Rand Paul or one of these other candidates, that's a mistake.
Does that also bother you, though, with the Democratic caucuses? You're talking about the Republican problems, but do you see that carries over into tarnishing the attractiveness of the Democratic caucus?
No, I think the Democratic Party is the opposite of the Republican Party right now. The Democratic Party leadership has the support of its congressional delegation, of our legislative delegation. We ran a terrific process in 2008. We also happen to have the winner of the Iowa caucuses become president of the United States, which helps the caucuses as well.
Doug, question to you, though, on this subject. Do moderates have the chutzpah and the girth in the party to retake control?
We'll find out. I mean, I don't know about moderates because I don't think there are many moderates, if you will, in the Republican Party. I think it's largely a conservative party.
Or at least ones that are willing to stick their heads up.
Yeah. Oh, I very much think so. I right now, with the problem with the Republican Party is the apparatus, as Jeff talks about, is we're controlled by about 7% of our party, which is the liberty wing of the party. You need to have the party controlled by the majority of the party because you want to win elections. So we'll find out in January of 2014, which will be the next to the 16 caucuses, is a very important night for Republicans because that's the night at which Republicans decide how they want their party to look going forward. Mm-hmm. So next year is a critically important year for Republicans in Iowa.
Here's a question I'd like to ask each of you. Iowa is a swing state, a purple state. Why hasn't either party been able to dominate here?
Because in terms of party registration, independents or no parties are the largest faction in the state. There's more no parties than there are Democrats or Republicans, and the numbers of Democrats and Republicans are about the same. So that's why we've historically been a purple state. That's why we have a Democratic senator, Republican senator. That's why we have a Democratic Senate and a Republican House. We have two Democratic congressmen, two Republican congressmen. We're a swing state.
It's because who we are. We're Iowa, so we're in the middle of things. We're between Minnesota and Missouri. We're between Illinois and Nebraska. So we tend to modulate all the extremes in the country, and we try to make sense out of them here in the heartland. That's who Iowa is. That's why Kay and I are purple today.
But I'm sure you both like to tilt it in either of your party's direction. Do you see any opportunities to do that?
The saying is around the state that, you know, we vote for the candidate, not for the party. I think that's true. I think people are not party line voters in this state, and they pick and choose the people who they think best represent.
I go back to what I maybe said earlier. Iowans are very much driven right now by results, not just by ideologies. And for particularly for people that are not doing well and haven't done well for some time since 2008, ideologies on either side aren't serving them well. So I think Iowans, and particularly people...
I thought you said the governor was making things better in the state of Iowa.
They are, but if you look at the national level, because the governor's running a very pragmatic administration, one that's focused on results. If you look at the national level where we focus on ideology, both parties have work to do.
An interesting political observer has weighed in this week. Pope Francis talked about capitalism and the ills of it. And, Doug, he talked about the idolatry of money. Does your party have a problem?
Well, you know I'm a Catholic, right?
Exactly. Okay. That's why I asked the question.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I think Pope Francis is doing an awesome job in terms of opening up the windows of the Catholic Church to folks that are interested in being part of that fantastic institution. In terms of his comments, I think what he was saying is sort of unbridled capitalism or unbridled market forces can lead to a level of materialism that is not compassionate, that doesn't reflect the needs of the poor. And we need to make certain that we're sensitive to that.
We're running out of time. I need to give you a response there to a case question.
Well, I only went to 12 years of Catholic school, but, you know, Pope Francis is a peace and justice Catholic, and it's great to see a peace and justice Catholic in charge of the Catholic Church for a change.
Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
I think he's a good Catholic. I don't know which Catholic he is. I think he's a good one.
Thank you. Thank you for that assessment.
Thank you.
And we'll end on that. Thanks for being with us.
Great.
Iowa Press stepping aside next week for IPTV's annual December celebration programming. And that's an opportunity for you to support your statewide public television network. And we thank you for all the support you've given us over the years. And we hope you'll be joining us when Iowa Press returns a week later. That's on December 13th. All of us here at Iowa Public Television wish you and your families the very best on this Thanksgiving weekend. I'm Dean Borg, and thanks for taking time out to join us today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
Iowa banks know you want honest advice about how to best reach your financial goals. Whether it's financing and education, buying a new home, growing a business, or funding retirement, Iowa banks, Iowa values. MyIowaBank.com.
Iowa Communications Network. ICN's connectivity offers Iowa's rural hospitals and clinics access to telemedicine opportunities. Iowans can eliminate distance barriers by receiving medical treatment closer to home using remote specialists located miles away. Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org.
Alliant Energy, working to help Iowa small businesses become more profitable with energy-efficient heating, cooling, lighting, and more. Information is available at AlliantEnergy.com.